This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony Brooks is out today. And now, a talk about the way we talk. In 1998, the makers of a PBS documentary called American Tongues came to Boston in search of accents. They found these two distinguished-looking fellows.
I've been here for about 350 years. My family came over with the first load of bricks.
I consider myself speaking the Brahmin dialect of Boston.
Do you think there are many people in Boston who speak like you two gentlemen do?
We're a dwindling group.
They're dwindling. We are a declining group.
And it's an even smaller group today. It's widely believed that Boston Brahmins deliberately kept up their British accents as a way of displaying their elite English pedigrees. Now, that may be true, but research by the University of Michigan scholar Richard Bailey suggests it was Bostonians who first started dropping their R's and that the English started doing it later. Now, that's just one of the revelations in Bailey's new book, Speaking American, A History of English in the United States. Sadly, though, Richard Bailey died last year before he could see the publication of his book. So instead, we have Ben Zimmer. He's a linguist who's examined Bailey's work closely and joins us now. He also writes the Word column for the Boston Globe. Ben Zimmer, welcome to you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. This is such a fantastic topic. But let me throw open the door to listeners first and ask them if you've ever wondered about the origins of a particular Bostonism. I don't know if I just made up that word. It's a new Bostonism. How's that? Whether it's words like bubbler or place names like Saugus or maybe that very particular way Bostons say yes or the accents that you heard a little earlier. And about that R, Ben Zimmer is here to take your calls. Tell us about how you talk and the way we talk and why you think it is the way it is. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We want to hear from you. But as always, there's also social media as well, Facebook and Twitter, at Radio Boston. So, Ben Zimmer, first of all, tell me, this history that Richard Bailey wrote, it takes us further back into the history of the United States and the origin of the Boston accent than I ever thought. I mean, basically, he says you have to look back into the early 17th century to find the beginning building blocks of how we talk.
Yeah, it's a fascinating historical tour that Bailey takes us through, and he stops in different geographical centers along the way. The section on Boston focuses on the latter half of the 17th century, and Boston was a very vibrant city and growing at the time, lots of immigrants coming and settling in Boston and elsewhere in the Massachusetts Bay region from England and from elsewhere. And so he actually goes back to look at as much documentary evidence as he can find to find clues about how does Boston English or New England ways of speaking, how does that way of speaking first develop? And he finds all sorts of very interesting early evidence for that.
Well, one thing that I found especially remarkable is that there is scads of documentary evidence because of the high literacy found in 17th century New England. I want to ask you about that in just a second, but I'd love to start off with this story that he tells about basically what amounted to a religious linguistic battle between the Puritans and the Quakers here.
That's right. Puritans and Quakers were fighting quite a lot in Massachusetts in the late 17th century. If you were a Quaker and you were speaking in the Quaker way, that could actually get you into a fair bit of trouble because you would be running afoul of the proper ways of expressing yourself according to Puritan principles. Quakers had a very different, more egalitarian view of language, and it was very often expressed in their choice of pronouns. So the second person singular pronoun, Quakers would use thee, thou, and thy. Those words were considered actually very familiar. There was a kind of a more polite form. This still, of course, exists in European languages that have this distinction of pronouns.
It's funny, hearing the thee, thou, and thy today sounds like that's the more formal, but then it was less formal.
Right. At the time, if you used that, especially to, say, a superior who you were supposed to be very polite and deferential to, that would get you into a lot of hot water. And in fact, Quakers were constantly running afoul of this. And this was one of the ways that sort of marked those pronouns as being the type of speech that Quakers would use. And in fact, those words kind of dropped out of the language in both the U.S. and the U.K., in part because Quakers were using them in this kind of transgressive way. And so the you form is what exists now, which used to be just the polite form. Mm.
And you write how after the restoration of the English throne, I believe in 1660, that sort of broke the stranglehold that the Puritans had. I suppose you could call it Oliver Cromwell's final failure. But that actually ended up leading to another huge resurgence of a mix of influences here in New England. I mean, that's, to me, to my ear, that's what makes this story about the development of the American language here in Boston almost the most American of stories.
Indeed, and that's really how Richard Bailey depicts it. I mean, this is a way, this in Boston at this time, it was a special mix. He says that there was this emergence of a speech community in which educated and uneducated African-descended and Native American interacted with the literate and the famous. So this diversity contributed to colonial Boston becoming a truly American place and speaking a truly American kind of speech.
I mean, we see absolutely the effect of that diversity, especially amongst the Native American linguistic influence. Obviously, in the place names here in New England, there are hundreds of them. Is there an effect on the spoken language that we see from the long history of interaction, both positive and negative, to be perfectly honest, between settlers and native peoples of New England?
There were influences, although at this point we might just think of it, as you say, in terms of place names that have a Native American origin. This was a time, though, when words from the local Algonquin languages were very much being infused in the speech of the settlers from England. You know, we think of words like wigwam and squaw and papoose, those sort of classic Native American words were entering the language. It's interesting, too, the way Bailey describes it, that there was this time, at least up until maybe the 1670s, when there was the possibility of greater interaction between Native Americans and the settlers. And so you have this kind of pidgin English as an intermediary tongue that would develop through this kind of language contact. And so there would be a word like netop, N-E-T-O-P, which meant friend. And that was sort of a common kind of greeting in this pidgin language. Unfortunately, in about the 1670s, things didn't turn out so well. There was what's called the King Philip's War that was quite bloody. And so there were more barriers to communication after that point. But those early influences still lingered.
Well, so now I want to get to our callers in just a second. We've got a number of them, but I've got to ask you about the famous dropped Boston R. Richard Bailey writes in his book, "While the omission or vocalization of R is a prestige feature in modern British English, it was very much a rustic feature in 17th century England. In the evolution of R-less pronunciation, Boston led the English-speaking world." First of all, wow. Second of all, how did that emerge here?
It's very interesting. I mean, I should first mention that Bostonians didn't just suddenly start dropping their R's overnight. There are the history of it actually goes back to the regions of England where those early settlers were coming from in southeastern England, Kent, Essex, East Anglia. These were places where the R was being dropped in their dialects. But most of the prominent Bostonians came from those regions and settled in the 17th century. This was not something that was considered prestigious in England until later. And according to Bailey's evidence, Boston was leading the way in terms of treating this as a kind of a prestigious pronunciation. And that R dropping would also develop, of course, in other parts of the United States later on, New York and the American South or other places where this R-less pronunciation, what linguists would call a non-rhotic pronunciation, took hold.
Well, and it was actually evident in the written documentation of the time as well. So it wasn't, I mean, now we may not, well, we would write the words with the R, but in the 17th century, the words were already being spelled without it.
Yeah, it's interesting because spelling was very much in flux. It wasn't so standardized as it is now. And that's actually very helpful for people like Richard Bailey, who were looking at these records and trying to glean little clues about the way that words were pronounced based on the spelling that people were using. So the fact that, for instance, George, the name might be spelled G-E-O-G-E, dropping the R in the written form. It was a clue that that's the way that people were saying it. They were saying George. They were not pronouncing that R. Similarly, fourth, F-O-U-T-H, indicates it was being pronounced as fourth. So those are some of the clues that we find. And as you mentioned, it's very helpful that New England at this time was perhaps the most literate place in the English-speaking world. So we have lots and lots of records of different types of language use still at our disposal for us to look at.
We are talking with Ben Zimmer. He's a linguist and writer of the Word column for the Boston Globe. He's taking us through the deep history of the Boston accent, as told by the late Richard Bailey, who wrote in his book, Speaking American, A History of English in the United States. We've got a lot of people who want to talk to you, Ben, so let's open up the lines. We're at 800-423-8255. First of all, Superfans on Twitter tells us, enjoying your show on the Boston accent over here in Kenmore Square. That's about as close as I'm going to get to trying the Boston accent. Thank you, super fans. Allie's calling from Southboro. You're on the air, Allie.
Hi. I was wondering about the origin of the word pocketbook, or as my family says, pocketbook. It's so distinctly Boston, and I'm so deeply proud of the fact that I say that, but other friends from other places don't say pocketbook. They say purse. So I'm really curious about that.
Ben Zimmer?
Well, that's one of many examples. I should also mention I'm from New Jersey, actually, even though I'm writing a column for the Boston Globe, so I will not try to act like I have local knowledge about all the different forms and all the different words that Bostonians use. But you can find lots of examples like this, pocketbook versus purse, where there's a dialect distinction where folks in the New England region, or more specifically in Boston, held on to a particular form where it might be different in other parts of the country. And so there's all sorts of very interesting examples like that. There's a great five-volume dictionary, the Dictionary of American Regional English, which just actually completed recently after 50 years of work. And it has all of these examples with great maps. So you could probably, if you look up pocketbook in the Dictionary of American Regional English, you could probably find a nice map showing where people say that versus where people say purse. And you'll find very often there are lines that can be drawn on a map to identify which dialects use which forms.
Huh. Let's take another call about a specific word. Tim is calling from the Financial District. You're on the air, Tim.
Hi. Actually, I want to ask about the word rubbish. It turns out that I've just always called it rubbish, but when friends from other parts of the country visit, they laugh at me for using that word. And I was wondering if that was a carryover from the original settlers, and are we the only part of the country that uses that word?
Tim, thanks for your call. Bet, would his answer be found on that same map that you were talking about? And I guess I'd expand the question to, how much of the peculiarities of word choice in how people speak with each other in Boston is due to that original English influence versus how much is due to the influence of, say, the immigrant populations. You know, we have a lot of Caribbean influence, and we were talking about Native Americans beforehand.
Yeah, I think that some examples we could find that go all the way back to the early colonial settlements. A word like selectman, for instance. I mean, that's a word that dates back to the period that Bailey is talking about, to the 17th century. Whether rubbish is an example of that, I'm afraid I don't know. I mean, that is a possibility, though. There is a possibility that there were certain expressions that we would associate more with British English that may have stayed longer in the Boston region while the speakers of English in other parts of the country were developing their own variations. But we shouldn't just sort of try to think of Boston speech as somehow trapped in a time capsule, and that it sort of somehow represents something that's unchanged from those earlier times. A lot of the regionalisms that we can find might be more recent, as you say, due to various immigrant settlement patterns that are a lot more recent than the old British settlements.
It is a living language, I should say. Ben, I want to read you another comment that we've received from Paul Omer, who sent us an email saying, "I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and after college moved to the Deep South. When I retired, I moved to Boston. In the South, I was occasionally referred to as that damn Yankee. Now in Boston, I'm sometimes teased by friends about the Southern twang that can creep into my voice. So I can't win. I think what I go for now is something speech coaches refer to as non-specific North American pronunciation." Now, the reason why I wanted to read you Paul's comment is, you know, I've read that there is a researcher up at the University of New Hampshire. Her name is Naomi Nagy, who's actually tracked that dropped R and finds that the prevalence of it, especially amongst younger speakers, is actually reducing. So how much is this regional rich language we're known for here in Boston, is how much is it persisting, or how much are we losing it? Is there a homogeneity to language emerging in the modern world?
There are certainly some forces that lead to greater homogeneity, and we could look at the R-lessness, the R-dropping, as an example of that. It is true that certainly to the north of Boston, so New Hampshire and Maine, a lot of younger speakers are not carrying over that dialect feature. It still persists in Boston. I mean, it's interesting. You can see that this style of speaking, dropping the R's, used to be prestigious in many parts of the country and in a lot of places that it is no longer the case. And so New York is a good example of that. Over the past 50 years, New Yorkers and those in the immediate vicinity of New York have kind of been putting the R's back into their speech. And that may also be happening in the sort of the greater Boston area as well. But it does seem that in that particular feature, which is so distinctive, and you know, when people think of the way that Bostonians speak, that's, of course, they think of the stereotypical, you know, Pak Ya Ka and Havad Yad. And that has held on. Perhaps it has had more of a basis for hanging on due to prestigious speakers like the Kennedys and so forth, who continue to use it while it has faded away in places like New York. However, we still find lots of diversity. It's not like just a complete homogenization of English happening. There are still many, many diverse forms that we can track and see how new forms are springing up, actually, in different parts of the country that may take over. New styles of pronunciation, new accents, actually, are still developing in America.
You know, Ben, I've got to ask you, over the weekend, actually last Friday and then all day today, we were batting around, you know, how to talk about this subject, especially since obviously every listener who's hearing me knows that I don't speak with a Boston accent. And so the reason why I bring this up is because, you know, for example, it felt to me like almost disrespectful to try to mimic the Boston accent because I'm not an authentic Boston speaker. And that got me thinking about the meaning and significance that's freighted with how we speak. So I wonder, I mean, the dropped R's and things like that we've been talking about as particular forms of the Boston accent, but it's not, is it one that's most closely identified with so-called working class Boston? Were there other accents here layered amongst that one?
Yeah, and again, class does sometimes play an important role in this. And so with something like the dropped R's, you played a bit of the Boston Brahmins at the beginning. And so you could hear how kind of a high-class Boston accent had dropped R's, but that may change over time so that it is more identified with the working class as that R dropping is currently in New York, for instance. And so there may be, again, changes in prestige patterns. It can be a very sort of complex picture. But what you're saying about how sort of socially freighted much of this is, it's very true. And there can be a kind of a regional pride in the way that you speak and your community speaks. And it can be a bit annoying when someone makes fun of it or tries to imitate it. That's why I'm certainly not going to try to imitate the Boston accent right now. When there are actors who try to put on a Boston accent in a movie, very often there's a lot of criticism over that if they're not doing it terribly well. And so this is something that's very important to people as a kind of an emblem of their regional identity. And so people naturally get upset when there's people who try to infringe on that.
Ben Zimmer, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
And listeners, by the way, I was born in Boston. I can even produce a birth certificate upon request. But Ben Zimmer is a linguist and writer of the Word column for the Boston Globe. He's been taking us through a wonderful chapter on how Bostonians speak in the book Speaking American, A History of English in the United States by the late Richard Bailey. Stay with us. There's more coming up on Radio Boston. Children's author Jack Gantos. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.